can feel your lips on my
Welcome back to the Big Show podcast at Podomatic.com. I'm your host, Robert Henson, and the music you were just listening to was sung and written by my next guest. Now, he's not best known as a songwriter, although he has written songs and soundtracks for multiple TV shows and movies. He's best known for his acting through the 70s and the 80s. He's also well known as being the voice for the Beast from Disney's Beauty and the Beast. He is also closely associated with his famous wife, Carla DeVito, who is the female lead on Paradise by the Dashboard Light, singing along with Meatloaf. Our guest on the Big Show podcast today, actor, director, and now novelist, Robbie Benson. If you watched it in the 80s or 90s, he had either starred him, he wrote it, directed it, or produced it. And if you watched him through the 90s and the 2000s, he either wrote it, directed it, produced it, and put the music to it. So what else could he possibly do? Well, he's written his first novel. It's called Who Stole the Funny? And joining us on the Big Show tonight, we have Robbie Benson. Robbie, thanks for joining us on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, is there anything you haven't done, like sell popcorn at halftime?
Actually, I would sell popcorn at halftime. For real, that would be a great learning experience. It would make me a better writer, I'm sure.
Well, you know, at this point in time, I guess we should have added, and now if your child is in college and they're studying it, Robbie Benson is probably teaching them to it, too.
Which is, that's really kind of you. That's actually one of my favorite jobs. I've been teaching for about 20 years now, and I just finished at NYU last year, and I adore teaching.
Now, at you've taught at several different universities, but at NYU, now were you teacher of the year?
No, I was nominated for Distinguished Teacher of the Year for all of NYU, which was a really cool thing. I'm not an awards kind of guy. I don't believe in awards, but when someone says you're up for an award, I guess I sort of believe in them. How's that for hypocrisy?
Well, you know, if the hypocrisy can work, then that's a good thing. Well, today we're going to talk about your book, Who Stole the Funny? But this is the first book you've written out of, you know, your career that's spanning decades. Why did you decide to write it?
Well, it's actually the first novel that's been published. I write and write and write and can't stop writing to the point where it's kind of obnoxious. But I wanted to write something that was funny. You know, I remember when I was 17 years old, I was going to the movies, and I didn't see any film that I wanted to see, and somebody once said to me, well, why don't you write the movie you want to see? And I thought, that's really excellent advice. So I wrote a movie called One-on-One, and it was about basketball, and it was a movie I wanted to see. And I wanted to play basketball. I mean, how cool is, you know, it doesn't get any better. And so it came down to almost the exact same description for the book. It was, what kind of book do you want to pick up and read? Well, I want to read something funny, and I want to read something fun and where I can, like, lose myself in it and still kind of get the feeling that, wow, does this really go on? And it does. This is, even though it's a novel, it's, as they say, a romana clay. It's about 15 to 20 years of experience of shooting sitcoms. And the book itself, what makes it so delicious, I think, is that it's a Monday through Friday show. So the book represents Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, from the very beginning of the week when you start a sitcom to the night you shoot it. And the absolute insanity that goes along with it, which is very, very funny. It's funny stuff.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's a little twisted and dark in some places, and you follow this sitcom for the entire week. Now you have directed sitcoms. You've worked closely with them. This is a novel. How much, you know, is real? How much is not real? And, you know, where do you fall yourself as a character in this story?
Well, I'll say that everything that happens in this book, in one way or another, took place in one shape or in one form. Maybe not to the characters that you think you... It's almost like Where's Waldo? You're trying to figure out who people are. But it is a novel, and it does come from a wackiness and a very dark wackiness that I have, but hopefully funny. And I guess I fit into it as the very flawed character who is the director, the passionate director who is trying to make it work out, trying to make everything as good as he possibly can. There's on each page, basically, there's something called the Hollywood Dictionary, and passionate is defined as a pain in the ass, you know, and brilliant is defined as mediocre, and genius is defined as see brilliant. So it's that kind of a book.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, folks who write say that they put a piece of themselves into it. You've directed a lot of different things, including, you know, Friends. You've directed Ellen. When we're reading this and we're looking at Who Stole the Funny, some of the things are over the top. Is it the exaggeration of some of the things you've seen in Hollywood just kind of to really point out to us who haven't seen it how crazy this life can be?
Well, you know, it is an exaggeration, but sometimes it's an exaggeration to the negative. In other words, I mean, you can't beat what's really going on out here. People write about it every single day. You know, they write it about it in the tabloids or what you see on some of these Entertainment Tonight shows. And I mean, it's absolutely insanity. There are a lot of people who do not know what goes on, and they make choices in television, and they don't know what goes on out in the United States of America. I mean, they have no clue. They just think whatever happens here in Hollywood is really what's happening in the world.
So everybody on Friends, like, for instance, New York was all coffee shops and everybody was white.
Absolutely. You know, that used to piss me off because...
I've got to get to New York. Everybody's white.
Yeah, right. Everybody's white.
Robbie, you know, you've had a heck of a career. I mean, you're talking, you know, 40 years in show business, from starring, from writing, soundtracks. But I will admit, when I told the audience you were on the show tonight, more than one caller or more than one email came in to talk about your wife.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you would say that, because when I was just listening to the traffic, I was in a Broadway show called Pirates of Penzance, where I met my wife, Carla DeVito, who used to sing with Meatloaf. And she's the girl behind the loaf. If everyone's ever seen, you know, Paradise by the Dashboard Lights.
Which everybody has seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was one Sunday matinee. I actually met her in Pirates, but she was doing her solo album. And she was opening for Hall & Oates in Philadelphia. And the conductor of Pirates of Penzance on Broadway was the best man at our wedding eventually. And I remember getting in a car on a stormy, really stormy Sunday late afternoon and making it to Philadelphia in about like an hour and 15, 20 minutes. I mean, something as insane. I remember my conductor, my best friend, he literally almost passed out in the car. We were going so fast. And we found her where she was opening for Hall & Oates. And I just, it's so funny because when I was just listening to the lady who was doing the traffic, all I could think about was walking into that theater and seeing my wife on stage. She wasn't my wife then, but I still love her as much right this second as I did then. And I can hear her singing. She was singing this song called Heaven Can Wait. which is on her first album. And it was one of those moments you don't forget. I have to tell you, it's weird. I just got the chills. It's so bizarre. I'm sorry.
That's okay, because folks were calling up going, do you know who his wife is? And when are we going to hear more from her? Do you think she'll be there? And I'm going, will you guys leave me alone? Our guest this evening, Robbie Benson, we're talking about. Now, Robbie, I recently read that you had recently had surgery. With a heart problem, but this heart problem is something that you've had for most of, if not all of your life?
Yeah, I was born with a problem with one of my valves. I had a congenital heart defect. And when I was 28, I had my first open heart surgery. And I've had 3 open heart surgeries up until now. And the last one was highly successful. My quality of life is wonderful. I mean, I can breathe really well and play with my kids, and it's really good. Life is good.
Well, that's good to hear. We're talking with Robbie Benson this evening. His book, Who Stole the Funny, is out. You can find out more about Robbie or his book at robbiebenson.net. Now, your book, you're really poking fun at Hollywood. You've been in Hollywood for 40 years. How's Hollywood going to take your book?
Oh, they'll kick my butt. You know what? I don't care. Because, I mean, it is insane, and I actually don't live here, and this probably will hurt, my future employment. But I'll sit down and try to write something else or work on music with Carla. But this definitely it does poke fun, and it's good fun. I think I like it. I had a blast writing it, and I knew when I wrote it. And when they said it was going to be produced, I knew that, I've probably seen my last job here in Hollywood.
Well, I was wondering, because as much as you had even talked about how there are folks in Hollywood who think that's the real world and the rest of the world doesn't really exist, that making fun of their so real world that, I'm sure to some people is so important to them, that's really got to be a nudge in the wrong direction.
Yeah, it is a nudge in the wrong direction. But believe me, they're already traveling in the wrong direction. I mean, they don't make art for art's sake, in my mind. Everything is about money. Everything is about fame. Everything's about glory. Everything's about awards. And absolutely so little is about quality. And that's actually what finally drove me to write this book. Was I got a phone call from my agent telling me that I was in trouble because the producers were angry at me. And I said, well, why are they angry? I'm really killing myself here. I'm working 18-hour days. And he said, you're trying to elevate the quality of their show. And literally, I went, man, that is funny. Okay, now tell me the bad part. And he said, that is the bad part.
Oh.
And I just thought immediately, you know what? It's passed me by. It's time for me to go away. So I thought, wait a minute. Even if it is time for me to go away, this is funny stuff. So
they actually were worried about the quality going higher.
That was the exact quote.
And that frightens me as someone who doesn't watch a lot of TV, but I have 3 children, and they'll inevitably want to watch TV. And it frightens me that there's people who work in the medium or who work in the movie medium that are worried about the quality being too high.
Yeah, it should worry you, because there are some great people who work out here. And this is highly subjective, what I'm saying, obviously. But I will say, from my experience, there are so few people who understand the responsibility of saying that they are responsible for 22 minutes of film or tape that is being broadcast to maybe 15 million people. What an opportunity that is. Opportunity to make somebody laugh or cry, entertain people. We're letting you into our living rooms, and you're just worried about your next paycheck and if you're going to get a boost and how many millions of dollars that boost is going to be. So that's the part of the business that really bothers me. It's not the show. It's definitely the business.
Well, it's, you know, it's something you've been doing for a long time. Our guest Robbie Benson joins us this evening. His book is Who Stole the Funny? It's a novel. You can find out more, robbiebenson.net. Now, as I was researching you, because like I said, I swear, everything I watched when I was growing, I'm 38, so everything I watched growing up had you in it. I swear to God. Cool. Every time I turned around, you were around. And I can't tell you how many times in my house the song Ode to Billy Joe was on, let alone the movie was on. But, you know, you look at your time span through your career, something I didn't know until this week was about Beauty and the Beast, and that you were the voice. And many of the people I've spoken to, even around home or with my family or with my friends, people didn't know that. And the big question was the voice itself. How did you come up with it? And what was treated? What wasn't treated? I mean, because even folks trying to think of it are like, nah, that's not Robbie Benson. And even on the phone here, you sound like the Robbie Benson I remember when as a kid. Right. Where did the voice come from?
It came from right here. Get out! So, I mean...
So was this something you've done before, wanted to do? Did you always want to be some sort of, like, animated voice, another character voice?
I had been doing voiceovers since I was about 12. And I had been a part of that world. I used to do it to get out of school, to be quite honest. But I really love doing it because you get to close your eyes and absolutely go anywhere. There's no restrictions. There's no marks, cameras. There's no lights. Basically, it's just mic technique and being the character. And the coolest thing about this particular movie, Beauty and the Beast, was that even though it was an animated feature, it was as if the Beast was truly a real character to us. And that probably sounds silly, but I treated it as if he was a very complex, tormented character. And but I had to say this, and I said it to them, and they allowed me, they indulged me. He had to be funny. But he had to be funny because of his character. I mean, his own temper and everything that was wrong and flawed about this beast was funny. As long as there was a voice of reason. And the voice of reason came in Belle. And so it was a blast.
Were you shocked at the reaction? Did you know how popular the movie was going to be? We see animated movies now, you know, every fall, every Christmas, every summer, there's a new animated movie that's going to be the blockbuster.
Right.
But when Beauty and the Beast came out, there wasn't much like it out there. Were you surprised that the movie was going to do so well?
Well, it's funny because all of us had this sense of urgency. We felt like we were sitting on something that was a Broadway show more than a feature film. And it's so odd because it then became a Broadway show. But unfortunately to me, again, I shouldn't be saying this, but the Broadway show is more of a cartoon than the animated feature to me. Whereas The Lion King, when they put that on Broadway, there was such great creativity involved with that. And so did we know? We all thought we were sitting on something special. We had no idea, obviously, that it would be a huge blockbuster. But and it still is the only animated movie ever to be nominated for Best Picture, because now they have a Best Picture for animated movies. But back then, it had to compete with, you know, with really fine films.
Well, that's pretty amazing itself because, yeah, I think in part to that movie, they had to come up with the category.
Yeah,
because
they did.
They
that's
didn't
exactly
because
right.
They didn't know that movie that all of a sudden animated movies were going to have depth, they were going to have structure, and adults as well as children were going to want to watch these movies and would get as caught up in these movies.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Robert.
Our guest is Robbie Benson. His book, Who Stole the Funny? It's robbiebenson.net. One other thing I had to ask, because while I was researching your career, there seems to be some confusion, so I'll ask you straight. Were you or were you not in Godfather 2?
That's a great question. I was hired and was on the set and actually shot the master for the last scene of Godfather 2, where Al Pacino's son walks up to him and tells him that he doesn't want to go to law school. He wants to carry on the tradition. And we waited for the storm to pass at Lake Tahoe for about 3 days and only shot the master and then tried to match to the master. And then the production had to go and do all of its location for the Cuba part of the movie. And in the meantime, Francis Ford Coppola felt that if he left it open with the son coming up to Al Pacino at the end, that there might be a Godfather 3. And at that time, that was his worst nightmare. So he decided that he wouldn't end up finishing that scene. So in one sense, I was destroyed that I couldn't be in the film. In another sense, I was in the film, and I had known Al Pacino for quite a long time before he was a star, because I was on Broadway in a Broadway show called The Rothschilds, and he was dating Jill Clayburgh. So he used to stay backstage and sit on the stairs, and when I wasn't on stage, I remember we used to sit and talk, and he was just really, really a cool guy. And when it would pour and rain, he and I ended up sitting in a truck to get out of the rain for hours, and we would just sit and talk, and just really a cool guy. And I was so heartbroken that I wasn't in the film, but then again, I was cast for the film, so I felt like, in a way, it is a part of my history. And being there and being a part of that remarkable piece of work, because that is, I mean, those two films are probably two of the greatest American films I've ever seen.
They're two of my personal favorites. That's why when I saw this, I went, I have to find out more, because I'm going, I don't remember Robbie Benson.
And you know,
and I can do The Godfather for you, the entire movie.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Well, you know, the real tragedy is that there was a Godfather 3. And that movie, you know, just wasn't for me, you know, up to any standard that they had set for the first two. But I guess that's our business. I mean, my goodness, you know, how can you bat 1,000 when you're making film?
Yeah, you know,
it's so hard.
Well, The Godfather was so good, then The Godfather 2 was so good, it's almost impossible to ask The Godfather 3 to be.
Yeah.
It's almost, you know, I couldn't see somebody doing it that well. And even though it wasn't so soon after the second one, but you know, how do you beat that?
Yeah, exactly. I agree. I mean, you got to cut him slack, because he's just a brilliant filmmaker.
Yeah, you got to come up with something. Well, our guest, Robbie Benson, his book is Who Stole the Funny? It's a new novel. Although he's been writing for years, this is the first one he's publishing, so now I believe you have actually done everything.
Thank you.
So how's it feel to be at the end of the internet? you can find out more at robbiebenson.net. I'm sure your people are mad that I held you too long, but I don't care.
Oh.
But Robbie, I want to thank you. It's been a pleasure meeting you, and I'm so glad you joined us on the show tonight.
Thank you. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate your help.
Well, good luck, and I hope you get out of L.A. and get back to your home.
I will. Thank you, man.
Take care.
Okay.